Chris Gibson, let's talk jobs and the economy. If there's a catchphrase that's going on in this election, it's about jobs. How do you make more jobs?
Right. Exactly. That's the number one issue in upstate New York. And, you know, where I am on this issue comes from listening. It's very much inductive in the sense that I've listened to small business owners, their employees. And what I have learned is that it's, you know, some people argue it's all demand side. Some people argue it's all supply side. I actually think it's a mixture. Of both. I look at six variables, and I truly believe that if we continue to make progress on those six variables, we will grow. And if we make the right choices, this will be our best century yet. So what are those six variables? I think it has to do with taxes, regulation, healthcare costs, and energy costs. I group them together and call those the impediments to growth, because when I listen to small business owners, they tell me, I mean, these are the affecting factors as to why they're not going to grow this year. So now we know, death and taxes. We know that there's a certainty we're going to have these things. So, how do we get the judgment right on taxes and regulation? Because we need a regulatory state that promotes justice, that provides for public health and public safety. So it really gets down to a matter of judgments. But taxes, regulation, healthcare costs, energy costs. And then let me just lay out the other two variables, and then we'll go back and talk more specifically. The fifth variable is infrastructure, broadly defined. Yes, roads and bridges, absolutely. And we need to have confidence in our roads and bridges. And by doing the necessary work on them, we help get our contractors and building trades to work. But in the 21st century, it's certainly more than roads and bridges. It's also the way we convey information and sell over the internet. So access to high-speed broadband is vitally important. Our office is heavily involved in this to try to bring creative approaches to continue to expand out broadband. But it's also more than that. You know, if we have, it's the human terrain, it's the educational system. I'm concerned that it was well-intentioned, but we took a step down, more than one, a step down the wrong road with the No Child Left Behind. We've really tried to homogenize our graduates. To the extent that that's hurt us in career technical approaches, which undermine, I think, the necessary preparation for manufacturing and other foundations.
So how do you want to change No Child Left Behind?
Well, I think we should recognize the fact that it's not working, and we should roll
it
back.
It sure doesn't seem to be working.
Yeah, we should roll it back.
Wasn't it the Republicans?
It was. Look, the president, I think, was well-intentioned. It was George W. Bush. He was well-intentioned. His wife was a teacher. And he certainly got bipartisan support for it. But I think to the extent that we pulled up to the federal level, a lot of what really should be done at the state and local level, and we've just put a new mountain of unfunded mandates on schools. And what we've really done is, I think, we've handcuffed our teachers. Teachers are special. They've had such an incredible impact on my life. You know, they know they're not going to be rich, but they get to be rich at heart with the intrinsic value of educating and influencing the youth of our country. So what we've done in the No Child Left Behind is we've created this whole regime of testing, and we've said that we're going to evaluate teachers based on the results of those tests. And, you know, when you compound that with these efforts to try to work online evaluations, I think you've really got a recipe for disaster. Because think about it from the vantage point of a young 24, 25-year-old, maybe the top graduate at, say, Columbia or some other institution, Cornell, any other institution, SUNY systems, and they're preparing to make a decision on where to teach. And the system that they're about ready to walk into says that you're going to be evaluated based on the outcome on this particular test of your students, and you're going to end up with your evaluation put online. And the way we fund our education, you know, this property tax base, is that the wealthy areas, they tend to incline towards progress in education, whereas the real poor areas are moving in the wrong direction. And now you're going to have a situation where that best teacher, that most promising prospect, has to decide between whether or not to go to the inner city and teach or come out to some other area that's really thriving. And knowing the pressures of having their evaluation online and that they're looking for a long and flourishing life, you can see what's going to happen here. So I think we should recognize the fact that it was well-intentioned. It's not working. We should should roll back the mandates. We should empower teachers, school boards, localities, and parents, and ultimately helping our students. That's the direction we should go. But that's the fifth variable. I just wanted to say on the sixth variable, it's capital and markets. Capital and markets. We recognize that two-thirds of our economy is consumer spending driven, but we're still a country that makes goods that other countries can't. Take, for example, this 450-millimeter wafer right up the road here in Malta. That's the most state-of-the-art semiconductor chip in the world, and it's happening right here. And we also make common goods in an uncommon way. So what we need are fair trading agreements. So like we did last year, Democrats and Republicans working together with the president to get South Korea, Panama, and Colombia. This is good for our country. We need to continually look at, and now, for example, I would say with China. I think that we have unfair trading with China. So I'm on a bill, mostly with Democrats, to improve the way we approach not only trade, but also currency.
How do you do that?
Well, I think when you look at China, we should, you know, recognize the fact that, you know, they have undervalued their currency for decades now, and it's predatory.
Okay, I agree. So how do you make them move off the dime?
Well, I think for one thing, the bill that we've got in the Congress that puts pressure on the kind of trading relations that we're going to have with China, I think it also signals an importance that there's a emerging, not yet decisive, but emerging bipartisan consensus, quite frankly, more Democrats than Republicans right now, but a growing number of Republicans that recognize the fact that that our relationship with China is unacceptable, and we need to address it. Let me tell you what we should not be doing. You know, one of the ideas that came forward is we're going to build a new military base in Australia to deal with China. I think that's absolutely the wrong way to go here. And by the way, the same breath that we're talking about expanding a base in Australia to check China and to keep them in check, we're talking about closing bases here in the United States. To me, we're upside down. We should be bringing our land forces back here to the United States, not sending them overseas.
Should we be building a $2 billion or $1 billion nuclear submarine with the rationale that it's going to be used to check China also?
Well, I do think that is one area that we're going to need to have a robust Navy, where I believe in bringing our land forces back here to the United States. I do believe the Navy is going to have an important role, and historically has had an important role, in ensuring open access to sea lanes and sea markets. You know, with regard to the specifics of what we build for that Navy, I think that's in play. I think we can talk about the mix of the kind of ships that we're going to need for the Navy, but I believe that that's an important mission that our Navy will have for us. That's the kind of presence I think is appropriate for our country. So let me just say, though, because we talked about growing the economy, I want to bring it all together now, because too often you see, you know, the parties are split on this, talking demand or supply side. Well, notice what I've addressed here, tax reform. You know, tax reform hits both the demand and the supply side. It hits the supply side because for small businesses in our area, you know, this current tax code is unfair. It favors large corporations. So we help the supply side. 70% of our jobs are with small business, but it also helps the demand side because our hardworking families have more money. And this is where those that say that our economy is consumer spending driven, well, in fact, it's two-thirds consumer spending driven. So tax reform helps. Regulatory is clearly largely on the supply side. Healthcare is on both the supply and the demand side, and energy is as well. Infrastructure is largely on the demand side because we recognize there's a need for public goods. Some would argue it should be all demand side in all infrastructure, but I would argue that we need a thoughtful, balanced approach that addresses both the demand and the supply side.
Congressman Chris Gibson, New York 20th District, the new 19th District, thank you so much for being with us. I always love it when you come into the studio and you talk and we can eyeball each other and I can say, yeah, you know, I can hold up one finger, which means, okay, we only have a minute left. It's great to talk to you, Chris. When we come back the next time, I got some political talk for you.
Okay, thanks, Al.